Hello and welcome to The Book Alchemist with me, Heather Sutty. In this episode, we're joined by Shari Lowe. An accomplished author of 40 books and several million sales, we discuss her writing journey, Jackie Collins, working with friends, LA living, and so much more. Shari Lowe, million best-selling novelist. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Congratulations on writing your 40th novel.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I'm really old. I've been doing it for a long, long time.
You're not old at all. How did your writing career begin?
So I had quite an unusual path to writing. I had never written anything before. I didn't go to college or university. I came straight out of school and started working. I had never done any creative writing, but it was my absolute passion, reading libraries. You know, I spent most of my life in the library when I was growing up. So I always wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a Jackie Collins style 80s bonkbuster style writer. And that was always my dream when I was a teenager. But, you know, life takes over, just doesn't happen. I ended up running nightclubs and traveling and running nightclubs in different countries. Then I was in sales. I had a million different jobs, all of them really unglamorous. And then when I was 30, I was bemoaning to my husband about the fact that I really wanted to be a writer, and he pointed out that it might help if I wrote something. So, which I know is obvious, but I just hadn't actually done that, and I don't like it when he's right. So I went away over the next 2 weeks, and I had this story in my head, and first time I'd ever written anything ever, and I just wrote the first 10,000 words of this book that I had in my head. Bizarrely, pure fluke, right place at the right time, I managed to get, it was a tiny publishing deal, but it was a publishing deal on the merits of that 10,000 words. When I got the deal, the publisher said to me, and we'd like the rest of the book now, and I was no problem, I'll get it straight to you. And then I was in a complete panic. I had to take 2 weeks off my work to go and finish this book. And I had no idea if I was doing it right. I had no idea what I was doing. It was purely a sit down, start typing and see where the story goes, which hasn't changed 40 books later. I'm still a sit down, start typing, some characters in mind, but maybe a top line kind of idea, but still no sort of professional proper planning, just telling a story. It's a very bizarre and unusual kind of way to write. I tell myself Jackie Collins used to write like that, so that gets me through.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And you fulfilled the dream though, because to me you are kind of like the Scottish version of Jackie Collins meets, you know, other types of authors.
I wish. Oh, I tell you, I would walk about in leopard print all day. I loved Jackie Collins. She was one of my hugest inspirations, as were all the 80s bonkbuster writers. You know, your Shirley Conran and Sidney Sheldon. You know, my favourite book is by James Clavell, who's, you know, with the new television show Shogun. He's sort of back in the headlines as well. My favourite book was Taipan. It's my favourite book of all time. So, yeah, much as I would aspire to be Jackie-esque, I fear I'll never be that.
I don't know about that. So, you've sold millions of books. Has your life changed?
No, not in the least. I work longer. I work even longer hours. It's writing is one of those careers that I adore it. I love it. But the reality is you sit in a room on your own all day long, making up imaginary friends. It really is that. So, you know, my life hasn't changed dramatically. I still work 14, 16 hour days. I still stay in a room on my own. I still work overnight because there's something about working overnight that just gives me that peace and sort of quiet that my soul likes. So, in terms of life, it's not really changed, but then I don't know that I would want it to.
Tell me what year your first book was released.
So my first book was released in 2001, January 2001, and it was a book called What If? And then 20 years later, I think it sold, I don't know, a couple of thousand copies ever. And then 20 years later, we re-released it. I rewrote it, brought it all up to date, and we re-released it in 2021 to celebrate the 20th anniversary. Just really is a kind of reflection on the fact that I'd been doing this job for 20 years through all the highs and lows, and there are many, you know, in this career. And it became a bestseller in 2021, which I just thought was the most bizarre thing, because this was a book that I had written, the first thing I'd ever come up with. And I was just thrilled to bits. And then that started, it spawned a whole new series featuring those characters. So I was really, really grateful for that. So yeah, 20 odd years now I've been doing this, 23 years I've been doing this.
Amazing. And your current book, 1 year after you,
yes,
currently, as of today, number one in the Kindle chart.
It sure is. It really is. I'm so thrilled, so excited. I woke up this morning really excited. I've had about 4 cups of coffee, which is probably, I'm probably speaking quicker than normal.
And it's so funny that today you're on the podcast and it's number one.
You must have brought me good luck, Heather.
Lucky white. Do you enjoy the promotion of books? Is that something that's out with your comfort zone, or are you someone that just loves promoting what you do?
No, it's not a, the centre of attention is not a, you know, it's not a place that I anchor to be. I don't mind it. It's part of the job, and it's an ever-increasing part of the job, especially with social media. So I don't mind it, but at the same time, it's not... I'm happy to do it, but it's not what I crave. I crave the sitting down, I crave the writing, I crave the characters that are all living in my head and desperate to get out. So I crave that side of it more.
How do you feel when you get a negative review, if you've ever had one?
So I think in the early years, oh my goodness, they were so crushing in the early years. I think now... I mean, I think the 1 year with you, the book that is at number one today, I think it's at over 5,000 reviews. There's, I don't know how many of them are, there's a small percentage of them are not great. So you just have to put it in perspective like that. You just have to put it in perspective of, I say to new writers, don't read the reviews. Mm-hmm. Because they, you know, as long as you can see the average rating, you know that there are good reviews out there. And I'm really, really grateful for every single reader who puts a good review on. So I'll read the good ones, but I don't read the negative ones, because why would I? It would just, especially if, you know, if I'm in the middle of a 12 or 14 or 16 hour day writing, and I don't want to read something that's going to completely set off, you know, uh-huh, doubts or insecurities or anything like that. So I appreciate the good ones, but I say to all writers, just, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah.
My gran used to say to me, what someone else thinks of you is none of your business. So
yeah, yeah.
She used to say that to me all the time. So I sit with that. If somebody's got something nasty to say about me, it's none of my business. I'll stick to the good stuff. Thank you.
It's funny. I mean, I'm, as you know, a big fan of positivity. You're in my book group, Bookface. And one of the reasons that I am so protective of the group is because sometimes when people leave a negative review, whether it's for a restaurant, a book, you know, clothing that they bought, you have to understand the context of that experience. And you don't often get the chance to do that unless it's something like TripAdvisor, where you can go into sort of great detail and you provide, yep, evidence. Whereas when it's a book review, it's so personal. And it just depends on your expectation, what you're comparing it to, how you were feeling when you read it. Negative criticism is soul destroying. I mean, you use that phrase. Yep. Whether, you know, it's somebody leaves a negative review about your podcast, or, you know, you get critiqued at work, you know, we're all human, we all have feelings. And, yeah, you know, I think something like a book, you pour your heart and your soul into it, you know, and if you're working 12, 14, 16 hour days, you know, the last thing you want is for someone to be dissing, yeah, it.
And you'd already, well, speaking personally, I'm already racked with self-doubt. I already think there is no way I'm going to be able to do this again. 40 books in, and I still, when I start a book, I just think, I'm rubbish at this, I can't do this. Wow. There's no way I'm going to be able to do this. Wow. One, this book's not going to be as successful as the last one. So you still have, you know, that voice in your head that is, you know, constantly a sort of, and that's what, you know, you channel that or I channel that so that it spurs me on and, you know, it motivates me. But the last thing I need is anything else piling on. So I respect people's, you know, people have every right to say what they want to say. I have never left a negative review for a book in my life. You know, I used to write a book page for 15 years in a newspaper. Never once did I write a negative review because there are too many great books out there.
Absolutely. And also, everyone's a critic. That's my philosophy. Yes. Like, I don't really have time to read negativity because there's so much of it going on elsewhere. So my philosophy is, if you didn't enjoy it, don't rate it, don't slate it, move on to the next best thing.
I love that about your book page and about your Facebook page and your newspaper column. I just think that sort of it's promoting the book world, it's promoting books, it's promoting authors, and that's the way to go with it.
And I think self-doubt is a common theme. People might not admit it, and I love your honesty because, you know, there's a lot of bravado and a lot of ego.
Yeah, I don't have one of those. Yeah. My ego fell out with my core because I don't have a Pilates core either. So I don't have any of those things. I just get through the day and just try and do as much as I can with it. And, you know, I do think that self-doubt is, it can be useful because it pushes you to be better. So I try and channel it. It doesn't always work, you know. But where I can, I try and channel that sort of worry, that stress, that I think, you know, I do have sort of workaholic tendencies. So I think that kind of fuels that. So, you know, I just tell myself that's what spurs me on.
I can relate. Now, you've written a trilogy with Ross King, MBE. What's your relationship with Ross, and how long have you known each other?
So it's the most bizarre thing. Ross and I have known each other since we were both sort of 19, 20, 21. He's a couple of years older than me.
But of course.
I'll just say that. I was working in a nightclub in Glasgow. He just started as a radio DJ for Radio Clyde. So we were just we were just pals. We hung out in the same group. We were just mates. Neither of us had any comprehension of what was in front of us. And then obviously Ross became hugely successful and then he moved to America and we just always kept in touch. And not on a daily basis, but just when I would drop him a line at Christmas or at his birthday, or he would drop me a line and, you know, say, I see you're doing this now or whatever. So we just always we were just always pals. And then, you know, I sort of touched on earlier on about the highs and lows of a writing career, and there are many. You know, I've been doing this for 22 years and just now I'm having the most successful time I've ever had in my career, mainly thanks to the amazing publisher that I'm with, Boldwood. However, there have been so many low points as well. And there was one point where I was doing sort of one book a year, and I was looking for something else to do. I wanted to do something different. And Ross and I were having a cup of tea one afternoon. He was home, he was at his sister's, and him and I were having, I popped up to see him. And I said, you know, we could really, do you want me to ghostwrite a book for you? Do you want me to, you know, on your Hollywood, you know, fame and celebrities? And he said, I don't think I would want to do one on celebrities and on his life, per se. He said, but, you know, we could write a novel together. Mm-hmm. He was like, I've got some ideas. I said, I've got some ideas. And by the end of that day, we'd mapped out The Rise, which is the book that you said earlier that you're reading that just now. Mm-hmm. And it goes back, it very much goes back to that 80s mm-hmm. bonkbuster vibe that I mentioned earlier. So the books that I write on my own are very much relationship dramas. They're mostly set in Scotland. They're mostly about female dynamics in relationships. So mothers and daughters, or groups of female pals of Scottish women who get through all the ups and downs of life together. So that's the kind of, that's where my own books sit. But Ross and I's books, the ones we do together, are more the kind of bonkbuster, thrillery, crimey type books with a kind of Hollywood twist. I love doing them. They're great fun.
Well, I'm loving it.
Are you? Yeah. Thank you.
I'm only in the first few chapters, but like you, I mean, it's funny. When I was growing up, I remember my first job before I left school, I worked in the post room at the AA Insurance Services in Erskine. The office was right next door to the PR office, and there was this tall, glamorous PR woman called Elaine Fee. And I thought she looked like Julia Roberts because Pretty Woman was out at that point.
Okay.
And she gave me a Judith Krantz novel.
Princess Daisy and all of them.
It was life-changing, right? But I had to hide it from my mum.
Well, so I read Princess Daisy. I've said this before. I read Princess Daisy in bed using the light of my electric blanket because my mother would not have been happy, A, that I was reading it when I was supposed to be sleeping asleep at night, and B, you know, it probably wasn't age appropriate for a teenager, but it was, you know, it was the 80s and these things happen. And I used to read the bump buses using the light of my electric blanket. Amazing. I just, you know, I was roasting for years. I was absolutely sweltered, but I read loads of great
so
books.
Funny. And it's weird because, you know, I never read Jilly Cooper. Have you read any Jilly Cooper?
I've read all Jilly Cooper's books.
Have you?
Yeah.
And
I love them as well.
Do you? Because I think one of her books are being serialised into TV,
yes,
aren't
they? Are.
So would you read, you know, did you love Jilly Cooper?
I adored the early Jilly Cooper books, were sort of more romances. And then she did the Riders, Rivals, all those books. Oh my goodness. I just loved them. I don't know that I've ever read a book that I didn't love, though, so I'm probably not the best judge. I can rave about every book. I can rave about, like, all the Scottish crime authors that I adore as well. You know, Alex Gray, Chris Brookmeyer. I could rave about any book. I have never read a book that I didn't love.
Wow.
So, or if I did, I gave it up after 5 pages. So I've never finished a book that I didn't love.
Really?
So, yeah, I love Jilly's books. I loved all, let's say, all the 80s authors. You know, if I'm feeling a type of way, you know, you get those periods in life where you just think, okay, I just need to feel that sort of enthusiasm for life, then I'll pick up a Sidney Sheldon or a Judith Krantz or an old Jackie Collins book.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, I don't know, restores something. I mean, it just sort of puts me back in touch with, I don't know about you, Heather, I can relate to what books I read at what parts of my life.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? It's
absolutely.
Like, it's like music.
Oh.
You can hear a song,
yeah,
and suddenly, you know, you're in a Glasgow nightclub dancing your heart out around your handbag. Or that was me. That was me. And so books have that same effect on me that songs do. They can make me feel a kind of way. So when I want to, you know, regain that sort of enthusiasm I had in the 80s, or, you know, if there's something that's happening and I'm going through a particular time about something, then if there's a book I can relate to about it, I'll pick that book up again.
Yeah.
So I'm very much books have got a real emotional connection for me. They always have had, even when I was that teenager reading with the electric, using the light of the electric blanket, sweltering. They've always had that emotional connection. And actually, when I write, I have that as well. When, you know, when I'm writing something sad, there are tears pouring down my face. When I'm writing something amazing, then, like, I feel really joyful. When I'm writing something really difficult, my stomach's in knots. So I still have the same emotional connection that I had to reading, I have in my writing as well, which is a very bizarre thing to have to go through, if you like, on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You know, it's you can get to the end of the day and it can either be an amazing, you'll be feeling amazing, or you'll be sort of wanting to lie down in a dark room if you've been writing a scene that's really sort of emotional or difficult or sad, or then I'm just a broken pile on the floor. So I think books do that to you.
I think that's amazing that you're able to feel that. I mean, I think that's so important. And, you know, when we talk about those 80s books, I go back to them because I love the glamour of it.
Yes.
I love that era, because I think nowadays, you know, because we have social media and everything's 24/7, we're just like bombarded with everything. And I find when I read particularly, it just switches me off. And I'm also an empathetic reader, yeah, in that I do get emotionally involved with books. And I noticed that, you know, one of your favourite books is Autobiography of a Geisha.
Yes.
Tell me about that book.
So it was a book I read about 15 years ago, well, maybe 20 years ago, no longer, and it's just always stuck with me. I thought it was the most heartbreaking, emotional book, but it has in it my favourite line from any book. There's a line in it that says something like, everyone has a place in their heart where they keep the broken pieces. And I remember reading that and just stopping and just thinking, I have to just stop and read that again. Everyone has a place in their heart where they keep the broken pieces. And it just, even now, it gives me goosebumps because I just think it's the most beautiful line. And it's a true story of a Japanese geisha written, you know, she's an elderly woman when she writes it, you know, looking back in her life. And it's just, it's heartbreaking and it's wonderful and it's tragic and it's all of those things. But I think that that book always stuck with me just because that line will always be my favourite line from any book. And, you know, I know that there are classics out there that people might say, oh, this line's better, that line better, but that line just, it just affected me. And so, it will always be my favourite quote.
Autobiography of a Geisha. I'll need to look that one up because I remember,
I don't even know if it's still in print. I hope it is.
Well, do you know, I tried to buy a Sydney Sheldon book and they're not in print. I was gutted. So I'll be scouring the charity shops for those.
But I shall loan you my collection. I have all the Sydneys.
But I remember years ago reading Memoirs of a Geisha.
Yes.
Which I thought was a phenomenal book.
Fabulous book.
Particularly, and I don't want to sound sexist here, but it was written by Arthur Golden.
Yeah.
He's a man. Yeah. And I just thought, wow. You know, I loved it. And I've subsequently watched the film and, you know, just adored that as well because it's a window into another completely different world, isn't it?
And that's the thing about books. You know, I know that now we've got all the, you know, as you mentioned earlier on, you've got all these TV shows and you've got all these box sets and a million different ways to stream all this content. But for me, the being on a chair in a book, it actually takes me into that world, and I think that nothing will ever replace books for that. I think books actually just open the doors to so many other worlds and cultures and all of those things and perspectives as well, and I think that's the joy of a book for me.
You mentioned earlier when you were growing up that you used to go to the library a lot.
All the time.
Do you still go to the library?
I do still go to the library. I do quite a lot of events in libraries as well. And I would not be a writer if it wasn't for Renfrew Library. I grew up in Renfrew and, you know, I was that kid who was there every single week for my six books. That was how many you could take out. And I was there for my six books. I would get them, I would take them home. I always used to say I had big biceps when I was a kid because I would carry all these books back to my house and then I would bring them all back the following week. I actually remember, and then, you know, I studied for all my exams at the library. So libraries have always been really, really important to me. And I actually remember, in those days we didn't have laptops or computers or anything like that. I'm that old. I actually remember when I was trying to decide what I wanted to do. I had a meeting with my careers officer at school and I was in the library and I pulled out, it was an encyclopedia of jobs and careers. And I went to W and looked up writer and I read what you would have to be to be a writer. And I thought, you know, at that point, I didn't know any writers. Nobody in my family were writers. You know, I had no connection to the writing world at that point other than this love of books. So I remember doing that in Renfrew Library. And then I think I went into my careers officer and said I want to be a teacher or something, just anything that, you know, would keep me under the radar. Because I just thought if I tell them I want to be a writer, they'll laugh at me. So, you know, that one was always in the back of my mind. But yeah, Renfrew Library and all libraries, I think that they're really important. I think that the fact that a lot of libraries have been closed down is tragic because they're not just about where you go to get books. They are the hub of a community. They're a safe space. They're somewhere that you can go. They're somewhere that you can use all the different things that libraries have now. It's something that you can use to better your life. So I think it's absolutely tragic that they're closing libraries. And I really hope that, you know, I make it a mission to continue to support libraries and they'll continue to do so.
Amazing. Have you been to LA?
So I do spend a lot of time in LA.
I knew it.
I do. I probably spend a few months out of the year there.
Writing or...
Yes. Yes.
Really?
So,
right.
Obviously, Ross and I have now written three books together.
Mm-hmm. He's based there.
Sorry?
He's based there.
And I do love LA. I love the vibe of LA. One of my sons lives in LA. It means I get to see him as well. But when I'm writing about LA, I like to be there. And also, it just fills me with so many ideas and it inspires me because it's just, you know, a really eclectic sort of, you know, you could be sitting in a corner cafe and someone will walk by and you just think, okay, where are you going? What are you doing? And all of a sudden you've got another story. So it's, you know, it's quite an inspirational place to be as well. And I'm really shallow. I love all the glamour. I'm so shallow. You know, I'm the person that sets the alarm to watch the Oscars and things like that. It's ridiculous because it's so far away from my normal life. You know, if MD invited me to the Oscars, I'd be horrified because I would be like, absolutely not. There's no way I could do that in front of the cameras and the frocks and all the rest of it. But I'm the person who's sitting on my couch at 3 o'clock in the morning with a big bag of popcorn
watching
the Oscars. So I've always been, you know, a bit moth to a flame. I've always been really sort of attracted to or fascinated by that world. It's not the world I would want to live in full time. It's not for me, but I do love LA.
Appreciate it. I mean, it's funny because I love all of that as well. And I think that's what life's about. Like, there's sometimes in certain circles this kind of inverted snobbery about rom-coms or blockbusters or, you know, those type of books. But, you know, I think it's light and shade. And there's so many different shades between black and white, you know? So
absolutely. And I think, as I said earlier on, I read and write books to feel a certain type of way. And you're right, there is snobbery against, you know, many different genres for many different reasons. And I just think that any book can make you feel, you know, if you want to sort of be reminded of sort of the joy of romance and love, then, you know, read that kind of book. If you want a bit of glamour, read that kind of book. I read all genres. All except horror. I don't read or watch anything, and that's no shade on the horror genre. I think it's spectacular, but I like to keep my range of emotions.
Gives me nightmares too.
Within, yes, uh-huh. I don't want to be terrified out of my wits, and I would be because, as I say, when I read or write something, then I feel those things, and I don't watch horror movies or anything like that. But, you know, anything else, you know, In any given week, I'll read something that's contemporary female fiction. I'll read crime novel, usually the Scottish crime, by a Scottish crime author because they're spectacular. I'll read something that maybe is completely out of my comfort zone that I haven't read before, or a new writer who's getting a lot of buzz. I'll maybe read that, or I'll go back to an old favourite if I just need a bit of, you know,
comfort.
It's a comfort read.
Yeah.
And I just think that there's room for everyone. I love it when someone reads one of my books and they say, like, this isn't the genre I usually read, but I really enjoyed it. I really appreciate that because I just like that, the fact that they've picked it up.
What's next after your 40th book?
My 41st. So I think I have 3... I have another 2 coming out this year, 1 in May, 1 in September. And then I have, Ross and I have another one in the works. And then I'll have another 3 of my own out next year as well. So I'm sort of hitting a 3 to 4 books a year schedule at the moment. So it's quite intense.
Shari Lowe, thank you so much. That was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for talking about books, my favourite subject.
It's my pleasure.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please take 30 seconds to rate, review and subscribe. It really helps. New episodes drop every Thursday. Thanks so much for listening.